Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the prize-winning interview program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Ready for the spontaneous, unrehearsed conference are four of America's top news reporters. Their questions do not necessarily reflect their point of view, but may be their way of getting a story for you. Now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our program comes to you today from Miami, and our guest is Democratic Senator George Smathers of Florida. He has just returned from an extensive tour of Latin America. His visit and the trip of President Eisenhower starting tomorrow serve to underscore the importance of that area to our own security. Senator Smathers had made numerous visits to our neighbor republics, and he has long been recognized as a leading authority on Latin American affairs. Senator Smathers also is playing a leading role in this year's political campaign. He has just been designated as Florida's favorite son candidate for president. He is the chairman of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Senator Smathers is a lawyer. He has served for 13 years in Congress, the last 9 years in the Senate. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Senator Smathers, are William Baggs of the Miami News, John Steele of Time and Life magazines, Don Shoemaker of the Miami Herald, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Senator, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Senator, there has been considerable confusion and controversy over what you did and didn't say regarding Generalissimo Trujillo and his promise to hold free elections in the Dominican Republic. May I ask you this? Were you accurately quoted as saying that with U.S. friendship and understanding, Generalissimo Trujillo can save the Caribbean for the democratic nations? Did you say that?
Mr. Spivak, I didn't say that. What I said to Mr. Trujillo was this. I said, it's evident that you cannot live forever. If you are not careful, you're going to be removed from your job because the processes of democracy will not be resisted much longer. What I think that you should do in order to be able to remain in this country would be to make a transition of the power of this government from your dictator's hands into a democracy. If you do that, you would be the only dictator in all of history that had ever done it. And I think that you would have an opportunity to emblazon your name in history as a man who had not only done well for his country economically, but had given it democracy. And then I said to him, the thing that we are, however, most encouraged, most concerned about is that if there is a fight for power when you die or when you're thrown out, that there will be a vacuum. And into that vacuum, the communists will move. Because I know from my own personal experiences around Latin America that there are groups of them in Caracas, there's some in San Juan, there's some in Mexico, there's some even in Miami,
Senator,
ready to go in.
Senator, did he give you any assurance except his word that he would hold free elections in the next 2 years?
No. The only thing he said to me was that he thought the idea had merit, that he would hold elections within the city, in the cities of the Dominican Republic within 15 months, and that he would have a nationwide election within 2 years.
A senator, in view of his past record, is his word good enough for you?
Mr. Spivak, let me say this. I don't know whether he's going to do this or not, but I think everyone would agree that it would be a great step forward, democratically speaking, if he did.
The question was, Senator, is his word good enough for you?
I am not at this time going to say. I hope that he will do it. I don't want to say that he's not going to do it. I don't know. The only thing that I can say is he told me what he would do. I will be disappointed if he doesn't do it. It may be that I will be disappointed.
Senator, one more question. What do you think would happen in the Dominican Republic if he were overthrown?
I am afraid that the same thing would happen there as happened in Cuba, that we would see one dictator removed only to have another one march into his place. I don't think that's good for the United States. It threatens the Panama Canal. It threatens everything that we hold dear. And obviously, it would be a great setback to democracy. I don't believe that we can sit still and allow a communist government to not only have control of Cuba, but at the same time have control of the Dominican Republic.
Mr. Shoemaker.
Senator, relating that to this question of Dominican to Cuba, under the Caracas Declaration of 1954, which covered the extension of the communist system of this hemisphere, the United States could call for collective action by the Organization of the American States in the Cuban question. In view of the situation in Cuba, as you just described it, you think it's time to consider some joint action?
I certainly do, Mr. Shoemaker, and as a matter of fact, I have recommended that to our Department of State and to members of the Foreign Relations Committee of the United States Senate. I think the time has come when we should take all the information which we have about the Cuban government and turn that over to the Organization of American States so that they can invoke the Caracas Resolution and determine for themselves whether or not it is a communist-dominated government, and if it is, then, of course, the OAS would have to take some action.
Well, some people have said the OAS is too weak to take action. Should we take unilateral action?
I don't believe we should take unilateral action, no. I think we should act in concert with our neighbors, because, as a matter of fact, the loss of liberty in Cuba is not just a matter which concerns the United States. It's a matter which concerns every democratic government in Latin America and, for that matter, throughout the world. The question of dictatorship is not limited in its impact to one country. It's limited. It is unlimited. It affects everyone. And therefore, we should act in concert with respect to Cuba.
Is Cuba as much a dictatorship as the Dominican?
In my own judgment, I see no particular difference. You don't have elections in either one. As a matter of fact, you don't have any private property now, according to today's paper in the Cuban government. You have there an indoctrination of the school children, such as we've seen in the Soviet Union. You see an indoctrination in the army going on that you don't even see in the Dominican Republic. I don't see much difference of one from the other.
But you said
Mr. Steele, we'll come back. Mr. Steele.
Senator, the death sentence of Carl Chessman was stayed by Governor Pat Brown in California this weekend, in large part because of representations made through the State Department by South American governments, Uruguay in particular. Is this a proper expression by another country on a matter of internal affairs here?
For my own part, I think it's a great error on the part of the United States government to recommend that execution be postponed for the reasons which they gave. I'm like everybody else. I don't like to see life taken. But to say that we should postpone it because there's liable to be a threat of a demonstration against President Eisenhower when he visits Uruguay, I say that that's not in the proper dignity of the government of the United States, and I, for one, think it was a mistake.
Well, Governor Brown should have discarded that evidence then, that plea on the part of the South American
government. I think Governor Brown had it within his province to make any sort of a decision which he wanted as governor. However, I don't believe that it's going to help our Latin American relationships to have it come out that because a group of students threatened to not treat the president with the respect which they should treat him, that therefore we're not going to carry forward with a legal and a proper determination made by our own courts. I think it's stepping down from the dignified position which I think our country should maintain.
Senator, aside from a great deal of interest in South America in the matter of capital punishment, is there much interest there in our own problem here of racial rights, of school integration, for instance?
I didn't find any great interest on that particular problem.
Well, do you feel that that issue here affects our relations with this great bloc in the Caribbean of people of many races?
I have traveled into these countries many times, and I'm frank to tell you, Mr. Steele, that at no time has anybody ever raised that particular question with me.
Well, let me ask you one more question on it. What about your own view? Are you going to support a bill for the appointment of federal referees or registrars in the case of voting rights?
I am a Southerner. I don't believe that that particular piece of legislation is desirable or needed. I will not support it.
Mr. Baggs.
Well, let's, John, let's bring that question closer to the bone. Do you believe that a Negro child has the constitutional right to go to a school where white children are, if it's more convenient for the Negro child to go to the school?
Mr. Baggs, let me say that I think we understand our viewpoints on this particular thing. I believe that we have sufficient laws right now on the books, and I believe that we have been meeting in the South, we have been meeting the problem of proper schools for both Negro and white children. And I cannot help but believe that if we were permitted to go follow our regular course, that in time, in a short time, this problem would very well take care of itself, not only with respect to the quality of the schools, and nobody for a moment suggests that the Negro children should not have as good as schools as the white, but I think that in local areas you'd find that there would be some communities where there would be no objection to colored children attending schools with white children. I think this problem is one of human relationships. I find up in New York City, for example, where many people up there don't want to go to school with the Puerto Ricans. And I travel to New Mexico, and I find where there, they don't want to go to school with the Indians. And I believe what I heard the senator from Honolulu, a Chinaman, when he first came to the Congress and this question of civil rights was up last year, and he said, I just can tell you one thing. This matter will not be settled by the adoption of a lot of laws. It's got to be settled in people's hearts and in people's minds. And I think that it can be, and I think that's where it should be left.
Well, Senator, do you believe that the Negro child has the constitutional right to go to the school where the white child?
I think that the Negro child has an opportunity to have just as good an education as any white child does. With respect to a matter of choice, I think that one of the very basic tenets of democracy is that people have a choice. They have a right to do what they like to do. If I choose to only associate with red-headed people, it seems to me that as long as that does not deprive the red-headed man of an equal opportunity, then that doesn't mean he should be able to associate with me if I didn't want him to. We've all got certain rights of choice, and that's one of the democratic tenets that I believe in, the right of choice.
Oh, one more question. Well, on this problem in the South that we have, which you're certainly familiar with, is the problem of trying to work this out in time. Do you think there should be any time limit placed on working this out in relationship with the Supreme Court's ruling, or do you think that...
Mr. Baggs, I am absolutely confident that if given time, this problem can be worked out. But unfortunately, when people from outside the South move into the area, or, for example, if we moved up north and began to tell them how to run their business, unfortunately, everybody gets their back up. And that's to be regretted. But I'm satisfied the problem can be worked out, and I think most everybody, certainly we in the South, recognize it as a major problem, and we would like to work it out.
Mr. Spivak.
Senator, I'm sure you talked to most of the leaders whose country you visited about Castro and Cuba. How do they feel about the way we're handling the situation, our wait-and-see attitude? Do they think that's the right way?
Mr. Spivak, I did talk with the president of every country that I visited and every foreign minister. I'm, of course, not permitted, and I shall not quote them, but I would say, generally speaking, that they do not look with great respect on Dr. Fidel Castro. As a matter of fact, he represents a threat to existing orderly governments. He's a dictator. Most of the countries, fortunately, in South America today are well-established democracies. In addition to that, Castro's government represents a government that is against the belief of private property. It's in some ways, it's the kind of government that is against most everything that these democratic governments stand for. So I cannot help but feel, from my observations, and talks with these people, that they think the time has come when we should deal with the government of Cuba more firmly.
Senator, I'd like to get your opinion on what we ought to do. When he was in Cuba, Mr. McCoyon said Russia was willing to sell warplanes to Cuba. Now, if Russia should do that, what do you think we can and should do about that, since obviously the idea would be to stir up as much trouble in this hemisphere as possible?
I think it would be a very dangerous situation, Mr. Spivak, if Castro's government got control of modern warplanes. We must remember that that government has already run an invasion against Panama. It was repulsed. He's run an invasion against three other countries, all of which were repulsed. But if he has modern equipment, jet planes and modern guns, why, there's no telling what he would do. He's already run this invasion against Panama. He'd probably try it again.
Yeah, but, Senator, the question was, what do you think we should do if there is an attempt of that
kind? I think that we must begin right away to cease cooperating with the government of Cuba. I believe that under no condition should we send our ambassador back. I think we should hold up the sugar payments. I believe that we should, as I said earlier, turn this information over to the Organization of American States as to how many communists there are in Cuba and what the government is doing, and see if we cannot get the Organization of American States join with us before he gets this equipment from the Soviet Union.
Suppose we did something about that sugar quota. And suppose Castro then tried to get us out of that naval base at Guantanamo, is it?
Guantanamo, yeah. Base.
Now, if that base were threatened by Cuba, what would we do?
Well, I don't believe that under any circumstances, and I've talked with the chief of staff of the Navy about this, that they could move us out of Guantanamo Bay. I don't think under any condition should we offer to get out or should we move out, and they can't push us out. I think we must hold that. And I think that we will hold it. And I certainly hope that the times come when, now that in the minds of most of the people of Latin America, Castro has been properly identified. If he's not a communist himself, certainly his government is carrying on the communist program. Now that he's been identified, I'm satisfied that most of the countries of Latin America are just as worried about him as are we.
Mr. Shoemaker.
What is your view, Senator, of the President's trip coming up tomorrow? Isn't this a little tardy, his getting down to Latin America?
Well, I would say this, Mr. Shoemaker. I would have hoped that he would have gone there sooner, but I'm certain he felt he had good reasons for not going. However, I'm delighted that he's now going. I think it'll do a great deal of good.
What kind of reception would you anticipate his having?
I think he'll be warmly and affectionately received in every one of the countries into which he goes.
Could I change the subject just a little bit to something domestic at home? Now, Senator, you're Florida's favorite son without apparent opposition in the primary. And if in the unhappy event you shouldn't get the nomination on an early ballot, would you use your influence to direct the Florida delegation to Kennedy, Johnson, Simonton, or where?
Mr. Shoemaker, that, of course, is a very difficult question for a fellow senator to answer. What we will do after they've paid me a courtesy vote as Florida's favorite son is that we will sit together in council and endeavor to make a decision which we believe will be in the best interest of Florida and the nation. Whether that would mean that we go for Kennedy, Johnson, or Symington, I now could not say.
Is it true that the delegation has been apportioned out, say, 9-9-10 or 10-10-9?
That's absolutely untrue.
That is not
absolutely
true.
Untrue.
Thank you.
Mr. Steele.
Senator, you're in the unique position of being a great friend of Senators Symington, Johnson, and Kennedy. Which is your bestest friend?
Mr. Steele, I would be, of course, ridiculous if I attempted to answer that question, and so I shall not do it.
Well, you're also chairman of the Senate campaign, Senatorial Democratic Campaign Committee. Aside from your own personal choice, which three of these men would do more to elect Democratic senators to the Senate?
Again, I honestly don't know. I have a great admiration and affection for each one of these men, but I can tell you one thing. I'm not now at this particular phase, I'm going to make a choice as between these three very good friends of mine, as you described.
Senator, I think the Kennedys have a home down here. Have they ever contributed to your campaign? Father, Joe
not,
Kennedy?
Not that I know of. However,
you know, wouldn't you?
Well, no, you don't always know. But I would certainly welcome it, and I have to run again in 62. We might suggest that to them.
Well, is there any alliance between you and Jack Kennedy? I mean, is this an understanding that maybe once your favorite son designation is through that you will support him?
There is no alliance at all. Whatever, Mr. Steele, Jack Kennedy is a very dear friend of mine. I respect him highly. I think he's a very able fellow. But there's no agreement, no alliance, no understanding at all.
Senator, you noted a moment ago that you're a Southerner. Do you think that the chances for the nomination of Senator Lyndon Johnson of Texas have been improved, or have they deteriorated as a result of his activity on behalf of the civil rights bill which you oppose?
I think that probably overall they may have been improved, because I think that possibly a lot of people up north and the far west would approve of his leadership in this present civil rights fight.
He has lost no southern strength as a result.
Oh, he has lost some southern strength. There's no question about that. But in the final analysis, I don't know. I think most southerners will finally conclude that, after all, Lyndon Johnson is himself sort of a southerner. He's certainly a reasonable man. Those states which have indicated they're going to be for him, I think probably they will continue to be for him, even though they don't like what he's doing right at the moment.
Mr. Baggs.
Senator, didn't you at one time make the remark, or some imaginative reporter make it for you, that no Southerner could be elected president?
I made that remark, Mr. Baggs, myself. I've said that I didn't think that a Southerner could get on the ticket. However, I excluded at that time Lyndon Johnson.
He's got more cowboy boots and magnolia around him.
Well, I would say this with respect to that whole question. I think the real issue is not how Lyndon Johnson got the civil rights bill up before the Senate, but the determination of the South will be made about Lyndon Johnson when they see finally what kind of a bill comes out of there. There are only 22 Southerners, yes, senators. There are roughly, 80 or 78 on the other side. So actually, in fact, most any kind of a bill could be passed by a majority, or three-fourths for that matter, of the Senate. So I think that the Southerners are, on the final analysis, going to determine what kind of a bill is finally passed, how punitive it is. Because if it's not a real tough bill, frankly, it'll be because Lyndon Johnson has exercised considerable reasonableness and fairness with respect to both sides of that question.
You don't consider Texas the South, then?
Well, I presume I always have thought of it as sort of west.
It's getting further west as this campaign goes on.
Mr. Spivak.
And, the Republicans won Florida in the national elections in 52 and 56. Are they going to win again in the 60?
Mr. Spivak, I don't believe so, and certainly I hope not. But I would say this, that Vice President Nixon has many friends here, and certainly in this area, and he's strong in the state. And in order to defeat him, we're going to have to get a good combination of candidates, and the Democratic Party in the state's going to have to hang together.
Now, when you say a good combination of candidates, what do you mean by that? Are there some of the men who are being mentioned who wouldn't be as good as others in Florida?
Mr. Spivak, I don't want to, again, get involved indirectly in making a choice as to whom I think is the best candidate.
Senator, you know the grassroots of this state. You know who can do better than another man, and isn't it part of your job to let the people know just who is most likely to win?
My job, as I conceive my job...
Can Lyndon Johnson carry Florida against Nixon?
I think Lyndon Johnson could carry Florida against Nixon.
You think Kennedy can?
I think Kennedy would have an excellent chance of doing so. I don't think he would be as strong in Florida, however, as Lyndon Johnson.
In short, then, if you had the choice, as far as Florida was concerned, you'd say the strongest man was Lyndon Johnson.
I think that, yes, in Florida, you would have to say. I don't want to say that's my choice, but I would say, as a man who's in political life, that Johnson would run a stronger race in Florida than Kennedy.
Mr. Steele.
Senator, are you available for a vice presidential nomination?
Mr. Steele, let me put it there, not if I can avoid it.
Well, you'd accept it if they nominated you.
I went into the Marine Corps one time because I felt it was my duty to do so, and I would look upon something of this nature in the same sort of a category. If it were demonstrated to me that I could be of service to my part in my country, naturally I would do it, but it would certainly be nothing that I would seek.
You're not going to campaign for it?
Absolutely not.
Mr. Baggs?
We talked about the situation in Latin America or in the Caribbean of Trujillo and also of Castro. What do you think the basic policy of this country should be in general toward dictators? Because they...
I think that we have to be against dictators generally. There's no question, however, that some dictators have lined up and helped us to some extent. Franco, we have a big base on his land. In the Dominican Republic now, we have a big guided missile watching station, which we could not probably operate Cape Canaveral without that.
Senator, I'm sorry. I think we'll have to...
But let's be against dictators, both of the left and the right.
Senator, our time is up. Thank you very much, Senator Smathers, for being with us.
Our thanks to Senator George A. Smathers and the members of the panel for a stimulating and enlightening half hour. Meet the Press is produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Our panelists tonight were William Baggs, Miami Daily News, John Steele, Time Life Incorporated, Lawrence Spivak, and Don Shoemaker of the Miami Herald. And as usual at this time, a personal word. Do you know that there are numerous government tax guides available to federal taxpayers to help them with problems arising in their income situations? Now, these tax guides go beyond the instruction booklets which accompany tax forms. They present specific circumstances which may have arisen during the year 1959 to present taxpayers with problems. These guides, now available in their 1960 editions, are called Your Federal Income Tax for Individuals, the Tax Guide for Small Business, and also the Farmer's Tax Guide. All of these booklets offer examples of typical tax situations worked out on sample tax form pages. In addition, there are actually dozens of chapters, each devoted to a specific problem on a tax condition. These booklets are illustrated, indexed, and very attractively presented. Consult the local office of the Internal Revenue Service for further details on how to obtain a copy of these or perhaps other tax guides more suited to your needs. So saying, I find that a correct audit of my book shows that the minutes and the hours here have all been spent for this week, and it's time for me to say goodnight. By the way, parts of the preceding hour were pre-recorded. News follows in just a moment. I hope we'll find you here next week at the very same time. May the days between be pleasant at both your home and at mine. This is Bill Hanrahan, who was substituted for Ben Grauer, saying goodnight. This is Monitor, NBC's Weekend Radio Service.